know what the mechanisms are for that.
For what?
On playoffs and various tournaments.
Okay. Okay, we're on. That's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. This is North Shore Sports Night. Bill Propaska is our producer and engineer. Bill Newell is the voice of the North Shore, as he has been for a long time. And Mr. Kearns, congratulations on your retirement officially today from your former career.
Yes, you know, you officially punched out of the system on June 30th. But, you know, over the course of my career, I haven't worked summers because I've taken the 26 paychecks. I mean, I've, you know, done certain things, but I wasn't overly gainfully employed. And so this past summer was the continuation of year of school, summer vacation. And so with the first day of school, you know, now not having to have returned, though I did return for my grand, as we were just talking off there, my grand exit, I now consider myself retired.
Well, I want to say happy retirement to you, and also to Neil Dineen up in Rockport. Neil, former coach, and he still is a driving instructor up there, and a good friend of ours, and a ski buddy. But Neil, same thing. Neil isn't. He's looking at his official retirement today, and I guess he had some kind of fireworks display or something this morning. He got up really early so he could set up this fireworks display. And flags waving as the buses went, not the buses, but as the teachers went by, and he was just, you know, marching like the spirit of 76. So,
yes, I also want to congratulate my other colleagues, Albina Pappas, Gus Martinson, and Dennis Martin, who also retired from their teaching careers at the high school as well. May they enjoy long and healthy.
That's at Gloucester High School, of course. Neil up in Rockport High School, and it's funny talking with Ernie Tremblay, the owner of the Sylvan Street Grill, a couple of weeks back. Ernie is he's been around for a while, and in supporting a tremendous supporter of athletics in the area, high school sports in particular, but also youth sports. And I mean the whole North Shore. But Ernie was saying how he's going through this process now of meeting new athletic directors and new coaches, and it's like all these legends and these icons who have been in place for so long, they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
Welcome to our world.
Yes, it's a new generation of for some schools, many new coaches, but athletic directors in particular. Yeah, I did have a potential employment opportunity for first quarter. Friend of mine, a principal, called up and said one of his former colleagues at a middle school was looking for someone to be a computer room monitor, not teach anything, but just be the computer room monitor. I guess that's like the guy on TV.
Well, I mean, that's a computer monitor.
It's like the guy on TV. Do something about the robbery. Oh, no, I'm just a computer monitor.
Okay.
I just let you know if there's a robbery. Okay, so if you're a computer monitor, you don't know how to work the computers, you just tell the students.
Can you say what school
that's that was? A computer.
What school that was?
It was Briscoe Middle. And Dan Bauer had gotten a call from the principal, who's still very good friends with. And the guy said, do you know anybody who might be interested? And he goes, well, I got a friend who just retired. So he called and gave me a heads up about it.
That's funny, because I was just talking about to Larry Jacobs. Larry, I believe, is at Briscoe. I'm not sure if he's there at the high school. I think he's at Briscoe, former hockey coach at Beverly. But just talking with Larry, we're going to be getting together. Larry, I've known Larry for a long time now, and he's heading toward the educational sunset as well.
Yeah, you know, I just don't know if I just want to do 5 days a week, even just for the first quarter. So I want to have more flexibility because there are a number of weekends that the missus and I plan on not being here. So I don't want to commit to something for 5 days a week and then all of a sudden, you know, miss a handful of them. So I'll find something to do with it. It's at some point.
All right. We'll be talking with Gary Larrabee, our usual host of characters tonight. Gary, sports historian, golf writer, also the Gloucester Times sports editor, Nick Kukuru. Also, we'll be checking in with Gloucester High School football coach, Tony Zarilli. And nice. I just got a text with from Lou Ciccatelli up in Revere, or down in Revere. Gloucester will be opening against Revere. We're not going to be broadcasting that game, but Lou Ciccatelli, a great friend, great coach, Coach Ciccatelli. He's been so supportive of what we've done over the years. Love talking with him, and he's at a fundraiser tonight. Of course, a very busy time of year for coaches, and so we'll try to get Coach Ciccatelli on next week before the Gloucester game, and we're going to try to check in with him as frequently Let me try
frequently.
Again. Frequently. I sound like the guy on Tranquility Base. You gave us a heart attack. Tranquility. Roger, Tranquility. We're going to be doing some different stuff this year, and you're going to be involved in that, too. But as we focus on football at this time of year, we'll be having a lot of video highlights and video interviews that we're going to compile into these little shows, short programs. And we hope to be visiting Rear quite a lot, quite frequently, if I can say it correctly, and Coach Ciccatelli and
I think you
ought to
go
team.
With quite often.
A lot.
There's a whole lot less syllables.
We'll do it a lot. There. Yeah. So yeah. Hey, you got one in there, huh? Yeah, that's good.
I have
yeah.
to do because it'll become me Fast and Furious. Says, yeah,
that's right. Well, not only that, yeah. now that you've got more time to think these things up.
Oh, yeah, that's the beauty of it. I can lesson plans for these instead of history.
Well, I was talking with another – this, God, this sounds like old home week era. The old Singer Sewing Circle, talking to another former not a former, but, a gentleman who just retired recently in the Gloucester Fire Department as a deputy chief, Miles Schlichty, and he's so knowledgeable about so many things. But, he says he loves the pace, just loves the pace. And for me, I can do this, but I can't keep up with Bill Newell. Bill is just working me into the ground here, and I love it. It's great to be this busy doing this and, of course, still teaching teachers.
Well, I think if we stay at home, Terry will have him doing stuff around the house, and I think he just...
Well, that's what happens. I'm hoping we can make enough money this year with advertisers so I can get an office because my studio is in my house, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. Did you do this? Did you do that?
Thinking about what Bill's logic probably is, maybe I should take that monitor job because the honeydew list keeps growing in length.
Oh no, it's amazing and it's just incredible. And when you're sitting in a studio on the phone, you got the computers, but you see on the voicemail, the identification, wife. That's geez, what did I forget to do? But if you're at the office outside,
so what did you do today?
Oh, I know.
I was retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not going to do.
Well, the thing is that I think the thing about sports, Coach, and maybe teaching as well, but sports in particular, I know so many guys who just, you don't ride off into the sunset. You just keep going. It's amazing. I think in particular of all the legends that we've met who are still active, for example, Alex Kulovich in Marblehead. Coach Kulovich, he just gets called in for all the time, and he looks tremendous, and he's just the best. Coach Hamer, same thing in Beverly. You look at these guys, former athletic directors, and they just keep on trucking, and I love it.
Yeah.
And so that to me it's something to shoot for. I want to keep the wheels turning.
Yeah, come springtime, I'm debating about what I'm going to be doing in the spring, whether I'm going to return to coaching or go and get my umpire's card and work 3 or 4 games a week.
Well, we're going to do this. Yeah, the football schedule is posted. We have a printable version up on our website, MSO News Sports. It is posted. It's there. Of course, it's tentative. I shouldn't say tentative. I should say subject to change. We will be having our video broadcast, live video streaming this year. We're going to try something new. We'll have some video advertising with our terrific sponsors, and I can't thank them enough for what they've done to support this venture. When we started this a while back, Coach, I got to tell you, when I started on the internet, maybe in 02 or 03, before we actually started broadcasting, Bill Newell used to do 2-minute sportscasts and WESX in the morning, and he would email me. That was the only way we could get it then. He would email me the sportscast, and for a 2-minute sportscast, it would take maybe half an hour to load, and then on my end, another half an hour to download, and then we'd put it up on our website, so we'd have a 2-minute radio webcast, and of course, I did the interviews. Same thing, to load the interviews to the internet took forever, and as they say, we've come a long way, baby, since then.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly have.
We've got our 13th Thanksgiving broadcast coming up this year. We will be finishing 12 years on the air. I can't thank you enough for your participation and all the money that you make.
I can afford to retire based on that.
Glad to give you a raise from time to time. And of course,
the only thing you raise is my blood pressure.
That's true. And I probably do a pretty good job at it too. We work at it. But it's fun, and to see the changes over the year. Last week we talked with Nick Kukuru about the top 15, I think it was, or top 20, that was in the Salem News and the Gloucester Times about Northeastern Conference football players over the last 10, 12 years. It goes back to, I think, 2001.
Last 20 years.
I think it's just this millennium.
But since 2000, the most dominant player.
Yeah, and the consensus number one, of course, was Jim Unis. And then among the top five, people just got kind of bounced around. But looking back to him, as I think we're wont to do from time to time, these last years since we've been broadcasting, we started in 05 with that hockey run, if you remember. We did the Thanksgiving Day game.
Ninth floor in Boston, the old.
Yep.
In the Fleet Center.
And we have seen some remarkable athletics, some athletes, some great coaching, some terrific events. It just goes on and on and on. But one thing of note, and we're going to talk to coaches and ADs down the line, I think, is we get into Gloucester football today, and along those lines, the depletion of numbers in the Northeastern Conference, particularly a school like Gloucester that has diminished. Gloucester High School now has fewer than 800 kids in it. You know how many guys are on the football team at this moment? And this is probably the most they're going to get for the season. This goes freshman through senior?
Probably 30.
33. And they probably, Gloucester High School, will probably not have a JV team this year for the first time.
Wow.
Can't field a team.
Yeah. I mean, well, it happened last spring with baseball. We had between 30 and 35 and 40 players, but it just wouldn't have made sense numbers wise and been workable to field three teams, and then over vacation there were so many kids gone away it would have resulted in a lot of forfeits and moving people back and forth, and Coach LaFada just opted not to have a freshman team, but the JV was a combination of freshmen and JV ball players.
Well,
and some of them moved. You know, some of the sophomores moved up to varsity on occasion, and some of the juniors moved back down to the JV to get playing time to avoid them from sitting on the bench
I think
for extended periods.
I don't think you can do that in football, though, because of the injury factor, the depletion. You know, there's so many bodies that they...
Yeah, and you can only play so much.
And they've got, they just don't have enough numbers.
Yeah, and it's... You know, and I don't think it has anything to do with the concussion issue that's been plaguing the NFL the last 10 years or so.
Well, I do.
With the heightened awareness, I just think kids are going in another direction.
Well,
there are so many other distractions for them that they just don't want to go out and participate in athletics.
I think the concussion factor has something to do with it. I especially do, because it's been around a while now, and moms especially are invested in this, and God bless them for that. I think, I talked with Tommy Babson this week. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Babson, but Tom was a legendary hockey player with Ben Smith back in the day, and he coached with Ben Smith at the Women's Olympics. But he's also, he was an actor in Hollywood. He was a stuntman for a while. He was a regular on Cheers, and Tom is back now, and Tom is working on a commission. Tom said he has had, I don't know if I should mention how, but he's had a number of concussions playing sports over the years, and it's affected him and his belief on sports and so on, and he's involved in some commissions in getting information out there. That's a story for another day. But I also think, Tim, the user fee, plus minus, I'm not sure, but I think this specialization in hockey, or specialization in basketball, or specialization in lacrosse, I think that takes away from not only football, but from all the sports.
Well, it does, and that's one of the things that I've always had a big beef about, is there are certain high school coaches that want, you know, their better, especially their better players, only to play their sport, to be available to work out, to lift weights, to go to football camps. And the same thing with baseball coaches. Oh, no, I only want you, because I want you to go into these traveling, you know, shows and these showcases, you know. And it's a lot of money. And for some individuals to say, you know, he goes here, he goes there, he's going to get a college scholarship, that doesn't happen. That happens to the very elite kids. So the parents are putting on an awful lot of money for, in some cases, a pipe dream.
And along those lines, the kids who get the scholarship, to me, in general, I mean, this is anecdotal evidence, but it is the multi-sport athlete anyway.
Right. So, yeah, it's a kid who has developed the majority of his muscle systems in his body and doesn't break down because he's in better shape. And I think that there's a burnout factor. And, you know, when I was down in Maryland, there was one kid who played at the local high school, and tremendous pitcher, left-handed pitcher. And by the time his senior year rolled around, he was totally burned out. His father was the head coach, and this kid pitched and pitched and pitched and pitched,
mm-hmm.
and he literally pitched his arm off. So that when he went to the local community college, he blew his arm out that first year. And that happens so often because, you know, these kids are dominant, but they're just overused because these guys want to win as much as possible. You know, they want to win the league title. They want to win tournament games. They want to win, you know, state titles. You know, it's all well and good. But you got to think long-term health of the kid. But they put that in the back of their mind, and they just literally burned the kid out. This kid had no real love of baseball after his senior year, and then he got hurt.
Well, I know a situation of a swimmer, too. Same thing. Swimmer was headed to the Junior Olympics, I believe, at a certain age. Had been swimming all of her life and then had a chance to try out for the Olympics, and she quit.
Yeah.
Flat out quit before, nope, I ain't doing it. I don't want to go in that pool ever again.
Yeah.
So, you know. The other thing is, I don't know what the other thing is. I had a point, but I'm forgetting about it. I've got to mention this. Can I mention this?
Go with it.
All right, we're going to do this, and then let me see here. I want to talk about a part of the Gloucester House. Lenny Linquata and his family do such an amazing job with the whole Gloucester House in general. Their dining room, you know, their lounge area, their what do you call it when you have people come into banquets and stuff?
Cater.
No. They do cater, but the big halls, the functions. That's what I was looking for. See, you lose it. Function. Thank you. So the functions they put on and so on, just tremendous. But we want to talk about the Blue Collar Lobster Company, which is at the Gloucester House. For lobster cooked to perfection in a casual waterfront atmosphere, head over to the Blue Collar Lobster Company at the Gloucester House Restaurant on Seven Seas Wharf. Order a lobster roll, a lobster, add some salad, enjoy the great beer connection directly on the working waterfront. Beautiful over there. Enjoy the outdoor experience of the Blue Collar Lobster Company at 63 Rogers Street in Gloucester. No better time than right now, late summer, early fall. Open Sunday to Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 11:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Did you know your neighbor works there?
Caitlin?
No, that's your daughter. She lives here.
Caitlin Parisi.
No, Lindsay Parisi.
Well, Caitlin, her sister worked there last summer, so I just presumed it was that. Okay, Lindsay, so Lindsay. Okay.
I saw Lindsay when I was leaving last week, and asked what she was doing, and she told me she worked.
Well,
I said, where's that? She goes, oh, it's in back of the
house. I'm hoping my daughter works there next summer when she comes home from school. We'll see. Yeah, great place. And Blue Collar, I don't know if you've been over there, Coach, but it's
I
awesome.
Have not, but I
very nice.
Definitely intend to.
Very nice. And Dave Linquata works, but Dave's everywhere, like Lenny is.
Yeah.
And Dottie, they're just everywhere. Great. And, you know, I can't think of Lenny's daughter's name. She's there, too.
Jessica. I had. She was in my AP history class a couple of years back.
Yes. Don't date her. Okay, Coach. Before we get to now, we do have some stuff coming up. We got Gary Larrabee at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Nick Kukrul later on, and of course, maybe we'll go to Coach Zerilli here in just a minute. But first, let's talk a little bit about the big boys. Of course, the big news. Lots of big news coming out of Boston. The biggest and worstest is Julian Edelman. The second most interesting, I guess, will be the trade for the Celtics. And then the third, is this the June swoon in August, or just a temporary losing streak?
Let's start with the Red Sox. They had one of these mini swoons earlier in the year, and everybody was, like, panicking. And it happens. Teams...
And so do injuries. They've got a lot of injuries right now.
Lose their bats, pitches get knocked around. They're not playing bad defense. It's not
six errors the other day, one game.
Well, again, you're going to have those, but I mean, overall, you know, they're playing good defense. They're still running into too many outs, trying to be aggressive on the base pass. There's being aggressive on the base pass, and there's being stupid on the base pass.
Yeah, we talked
you
about
know,
that.
And occasionally, and there's aggression, and then they just simply run themselves into outs. They run themselves you know, out of innings in crucial situations. They're making outs at third base, which is the cardinal sin.
Is that coaching? Is that managing?
It in a way it is. If you're taking the reins off and saying, okay, if you think you can make a go. It's not always a good situation. You're probably not as fast as you think you are.
Well, but there are people you can do that with.
There are, but you also have to read the situation. You don't try to go first or third on a ball hit to left field.
Right.
And they're trying to do
that. Well, you should know that.
You don't go second home
as
a
freshman.
Ball hit to shallow left field.
Hmm.
Okay, the ball's hit shallow. The outfielders are playing shallow. You're a dead duck. The guy makes a good throw. And what you're banking on is, again,
hey.
It's going to take a perfect throw to get me out.
How about this one? You're on third base, a one hopper to the third baseman. You're trying to go home.
You know, you're running on contact. They're not easily running on contact, but you're running on contact when the ball hit to the middle of the field.
Right, right.
You're not running on contact when the ball is going right down in front of you.
Right at you.
You know, that just doesn't make
sense. This is the major leagues.
It doesn't make any sense, and it's like going like, okay, we're telling you run on contact, but you got to – those are just things you have to know. And you wonder how much – and again, it goes back to coaching. But these guys are professionals. They've been coached all the way up.
They're major league professionals.
You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, you've been coached all the way up through Little League, Babe Ruth, high school, college, summer leagues, you know, and minor leagues. And, you know, ball hit straight down the line, hold. If he goes to first base, break. But when you're running on contact, you're looking for a ball. Middle of the field. Because otherwise, third base is playing in, first base is playing in, you're a dead duck. So you've got to be smarter than that. And again, it's just not smart baseball.
That's what I say. You know, it is ingrained in these guys. So I really wonder about whether it's the third base coach, whether it's the manager, whatever it is. But you're right.
You're looking to throw the wrong base.
They've run into more outs. I think they've been rally killers.
You know, there was a play the other day, the last week when they were playing the Yankees. Ball hit the right field, hit the Judge, makes the catch, lobs it in. I think it was Mookie Betts. Mookie tagged, faked like he was going, stopped. Judge lobbed the ball in, he scooted to third base. Instead of Judge, man on second base.
Fire it, baby.
Gun the ball into the cutoff.
You fire it. I don't understand.
Okay,
I've never understood that about major league outfielders. When they're just relaxed, you get the ball in. And you know what, Tim? I've seen most good teams, most players that I've seen, most major leaguers in the outfield, I think the best of them, even when there's nobody on base, it's just a habit.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. Fire it in, bing, bing. There's nothing casual about it, and it's just automatic.
Dwight Evans. You know, every throw you make to the infield, this is what, you know, young kids should do this. Every throw you make to the infield is a practice throw for a situation where there's a runner.
And you get muscle memory that way. You know?
It's definitely something that you need to practice.
And then you do it the other
way. Make that throw on
the
line.
You do the casual the other way, and then all of a sudden you're in a game situation. And you have this momentary brain hiccup, and you do a casual throw, like you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, okay, guy takes another base on your score, scores a run.
You know, and you've got to be aware. You know, it was drilled into me so long ago. How many, you know, who's up? Who's up? How many men on? Where are they?
They've got
how many outs there are?
They've got scoreboards all over the place. You can't be on the field without seeing a scoreboard.
Right.
And yet they
still forget how many outs there are.
I know.
Throw the ball into the stands. How many times have we seen that? Oh, they just throw the ball. You know, they lob the ball in, and the guy runs home with scoring a run. It's like, you know, how stupid do you have to be? How disconnected from the reality of the game do you have to be to mess up like that? In a high school game, the coach would yank you out of the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's simply no excuse for
okay,
that.
So we're going to go with mini slump, all right? Edelman, quickly, because we got about 5 minutes here. We got to go to Gary.
You're not going to certainly replace his overall production, but you've got Amendola. You know, the kid Carr, I think, now definitely makes the team because he's played really well. Everybody is
gushing over.
Did
you see his vertical leap?
Yeah, but he could have been a casualty of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the kid from Buffalo, from Washington.
They got a running back who was a receiver in college.
Yeah, you know, you got White who can catch out of the back. You got a number of guys that
I mean, you just know. Belichick lost Brady and still won 11 games. Okay. They didn't have Gronk last year. They won a Super Bowl. They lost two games all year without Gronkowski for, they had him for four games. But at the end of the season, they didn't have him. And yet, they managed to do what needs to be. They will do what needs to be done. They guys will step up. That's the one thing about this team that continues to amaze, that these guys take great pride in stepping up and doing as well as you can do or better than you can do in order to help the team continue to win.
Biggest example for me to put an exclamation point on that, Shane Vereen, most circumstances, would have been the Super Bowl MVP a couple years ago, right? Would have been. Brady gets it, of course. Deservedly so. This year, James White.
Oh, yeah.
James White, Super Bowl MVP.
But
he was behind Shane Vereen 2 years ago.
No.
And boom, just right in, and did the same thing, maybe even better.
Yeah, and he was hurt. You know, Dion Lewis got hurt. Belichick just has a way of elevating the physical play of the players while at the same time elevating the mental aspect of their game.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And then the trade.
He's a popular player. They got an all-star, an NBA champion, 3 years younger, seven or eight inches taller.
Friendlier contract.
If it goes through, which they have, I think, until Wednesday to sign off on it, and there's a lot of talk that Cleveland's not going to back out of the deal because they want to get rid of Irving. They like having that first round unprotected draft choice so you could replace Isaiah with if need be. Tough deal, but they said Danny told him up front, he's got a tweaked tip, and they went okay, but we'll take him anyways. So they may not have any grounds to stand on, basically, the Cavaliers.
I was seeing
they went in knowing that he was injured.
Something I read, and we got a couple of minutes here and we got to go to Gary. Something I read somewhere, but there's something like three or four players left on the roster from last year.
Four guys.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Coach Stevens has got to be going, okay, I'm going to a new team this year.
he's basically going to have to, and the players that he has weren't starters.
I know.
Every starter is gone on this team.
This was a team that won, 50-something games?
Yeah.
They went to the Eastern Finals, did they?
Yep.
And he wiped out the whole roster.
Danny said, okay, we did that with this crowd. If we get some better talent, what can we do? And he's gotten some very good talent. He's got some really good youngsters coming in. It'll be a real test for Brad Stevens to get these guys playing as a cohesive unit, as quickly as possible. The team has gotten younger. They certainly, you have to consider, they're more athletic. So, there's the possibility of being back in the conference finals once again against Cleveland. If they end up the deal going through and they have Kyrie, is that going to be enough of a difference? Matching him with Al Horford and
who else?
There's a kid from Utah.
Is that
going to be enough?
We'll see.
To put them over the top and get him into the finals.
All right, we'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com. or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we are back, and Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and a long-time advocate of the Lynx, with us again. I'm struggling for words here. Gary, help me out.
Well, it's just nice to be back with you guys talking golf and talking a few other things tonight, which I will share with you as we get towards the end of the segment. But great to be with you, and lots of golf to talk about.
Oh, that's a tease. I love it.
Okay, now, Gary, I didn't see much of the Wyndham over the weekend, though I did see the Comcast Sports on Saturday night and said, you know, Spieth had put himself in position to walk away with that tournament and pick up some valuable FedEx points, but he loses to Dustin Johnson in the first hole of playoff, and I have a question afterwards about playoff golf. But summarize Spieth's weekend, or his 4 days.
Well, it was pretty much the Jordan Spieth show. For 3.5 rounds, and then Johnson, comes from 5 strokes back the final round to overtake Mr. Spieth, and one of the great, head-to-head battles, not really head-to-head, but great to see those two top-notch players come down to the finish. And, of course, in the one-hole playoff, sudden-death playoff, Johnson made 3, Spieth made 4, and shed no tears for either of them, gentlemen, because Johnson won $1.575 million, and Spieth won $945,000. But it sets the stage for this weekend, which is the Dell Technologies, the former Deutsche Bank, now the Dell Technologies Championship at TPC Boston, Friday to Monday. It's round 2 of the 4 tournament FedEx Cup playoffs, and hopefully these guys will both be showing up at TPC Boston come the opening run on Friday. It should be another great weekend of the best of the best of men's golfers in the world playing at TPC Boston down on Norton.
Now, Gary, explain the playoff system. Did they go back to, did they replay 18? Did they go back to 16, or did they go back to 10?
I think that's determined before the tournament starts by not only the tournament officials for the PGA Tour, but also by the network televising the event. I don't think the players have any input. But it seems to change every week, doesn't it, Tim? And, there's different playoff formats for the 4 majors. And it's the way they want to do it, and I get no problem with it. It gives us great drama, and whether they play one hole or aggregate 3 or 4 holes like they do with the Open Championship. Of course, the Masters is a sudden-death playoff. The U.S. Open is a 18-hole playoff the next day. As long as they give us the best players in the world up at the top of the leaderboard, who cares?
Yeah, when I heard that, he won on the first hole, I'm like, Okay, and immediately, I have to ask Gary about this because it seems like it's a hot spot, and it's kind of interesting that the networks would have some kind of say in the manner in which a playoff would take place.
Tim, you don't realize how much money these networks are paying the PGA Tour to televise their tournaments?
Oh, no, I understand that, but it's not like they tell baseball, okay, we've paid for the rights, we only want to play, a maximum of 3 extra innings, or we're going to pay for 1 overtime in football.
Well, you're right. Baseball is a little different. The team sport's a little different than individual sport of golf. In tennis, they've changed the rules over the years. It used to be, I think it still is at Wimbledon, you have to play a set until one of the players wins that set by 2 games. They can play, I think, No, I think, yeah, I think
2 points.
What still works at Wimbledon. They can play a 19-17
right.
set if need be. But I know at the U.S. Open, which just started today, you see, I'm really up on my tennis too, guys, that I think they only go to, I think it's 6-6. And then they go to a like a sudden death game. And once they get to, you know, the 4 points to typically win the game, that's it, unless they can't determine a winner on that one game, and they'll keep playing as long as they need to until one of the two players wins that game by 2 points. But they can still have some marathons as well. But that's different sports, different strokes, different guidelines, and golf is no different. But keep in mind, Tim, that the networks that televise the golf are very much in bed with the tours, with the PGA Tour, and they work things out together when they can to keep everybody happy.
Okay, that clarifies the question.
There you go.
All right, Gary, what else is on the radar that you wanted to discuss tonight?
Well, of course, we've got the Dell Technologies Championship starts Friday. Dell Technologies takes over for Deutsche Bank, and this may be the last or next to last FedEx Cup playoff tournament here in the greater Boston area, because they are changing the schedule of the PGA Tour and the scheduling of the FedEx Cup playoffs for either next year or for 2019. So watch out for that. That's Friday, and we think we're going to have all the top players there. No one has announced they're pulling out, because I think they've set up the schedule so that they're going to be playing the four tournaments over a five-week stretch, so that most every player should be there, all the big names, McIlroy, et cetera, should be there in Boston starting Friday. But getting back to the local golf scene, we had a terrific New England PGA Championship, the 97th annual, last week at the Renaissance Club in Haverhill and Turner Hill in Ipswich. The winner was an assistant pro, first-year assistant pro at the Shutter called Liam Friedman. Shot 208, 8-under, but with five holes to go, the new Essex County Club assistant professional, Bob Brusso, that's spelled B-R-U-S-O, was one shot out of the lead. He didn't make any birdies down the stretch. Friedman did, and Friedman ended up winning the tournament and the $15,000 first prize by four shots. But it's worth noting that Bob Brusso played terrific, co-leader after two rounds. And also Old Man River, 61-year-old Kirk Hinefeld, finished tied for sixth, a commendable showing by Kirk as well, as he and Brusso were the top two North Shore finishers. Brusso last year, guys, you may remember, as an assistant pro at Worcester, was one shot out of the lead after two rounds, and blew to a 79 in the third round, finished in the ninth place spot. It was very disappointing. Had that to deal with this year and played much better than Lewis Buffett final round, shooting 73. Still came up short, but he's a player with a game, and we'll be reading, I think, and talking more about him down the road.
I love it when you say, as you may remember.
Well, it was last week, so it's been 5 days. One other thing to make note of, guys, on a more serious note, Dave Whipple, who had been the owner and proprietor of Candlewood Golf Course, a nice little nine-hole public course on Route 133 in Ipswich, Dave passed away last week after running that nine-hole golf course. It's been in the family since it first opened in 1932. Dave passed away after running that golf course for 53 years. So we pass along our condolences to Dave. His father, Lester, had built the course and opened it for business in 1932. Among his more prominent players who liked to play there, and here's a good question for you, Rick, is that fantastic former great baseball player from Gloucester. He played for the Phillies. His name escapes me at the moment.
First baseman, was he? Stuffy McGinnis?
I believe it was Stuffy McGinnis from Gloucester.
Pulled that one out of the hat.
He played there. Why he didn't play at Bass Rocks, I'll never know. But he liked to play Candlewood, brought his baseball buddies to Candlewood. Another fellow who was pretty well known who loved to play Candlewood was an author named John Updike. So
wow.
We mourn the passing of Dave Whipple. But you guys also may remember Dave Whipple for being the coach of the 1969 Class D state champion Ipswich High Tigers basketball team.
I thought the name rang a bell.
He
yep.
was the Ipswich High coach for yep. like 15, 20 years.
Yep.
Had some great battles with Sherm Kinney of Hamilton Wenham. And when Dave decided to finish up coaching, he devoted all of his duties to keeping Kennewood running smoothly, and we'll miss Dave Whipple.
Well, we were having a discussion, and I appreciate that, Gary. Thanks for the information, because you know, you go by there, it's a beautiful sight to see. You know, the little bit of rolling hills there on the way out toward Ipswich. But you talk about Dave Whipple, you know, multi sports athletes and so on. Tim and I were talking about that earlier, and it's sad to see the demise of that. So many kids are focusing on one sport, but that's a topic for another day. What else you got coming up?
Well, I'd like to share with you the fact that Cheryl Murtagh has not been much of a golfer over the years, but you may remember the name Rick Cheryl Murtagh from Peabody, from Bishop Fenwick High School. Three sports star. She also was an All-America field hockey player at Northeastern. Just yesterday, she won her 400th field hockey game coaching the Northeastern field hockey varsity. And we just want to congratulate Cheryl for that extraordinary milestone, coaching the 400th victory for the Northeastern women's field hockey team.
That is tremendous. That is a great one, man. That is, yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can get her on at some point. Okay, so what did you decide to do for this Friday's column?
I haven't decided yet, Rick. I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
You just reminded me he has to pick a topic.
Okay.
Gary, I noticed last week you wrote a couple of specific articles about a local tournament and a couple of players who were involved in them. I'm kind of surprised to see you in the paper earlier before Friday.
Well, when things develop, we pitch in whenever we can. But I still have a nice connection with the Salem News Sports guys, and whenever I can pitch in on the golf side, I certainly like doing that. As well as when we have some great people who pass away, who are from a bygone era, like Dave Whipple. But the big thing this week, guys, really is the Dell Technologies tournament at TPC Boston,
mm-hmm.
and we'll have a chance to watch it on TV all 4 days, or get down to Norton. But it may be one of the last, maybe the very last, FedEx Cup playoffs tournament we have here in Boston.
Okay. All right, Gary, looking forward to reading about it. And let's see, next Monday's Labor Day, so we'll probably be off, so we'll talk with you in a couple weeks.
Perfect. See you then, guys.
Hey, thank
all
you, Gary.
Have
great,
a good night.
Great talking with you. Gary Larrabee, sports historian. I just texted Lou Ciccatelli. Yeah, we'll talk to you next Monday night.
Good, Rick.
I know. I'll have to get back
to
him.
Stay on top of it.
Coach Ciccatelli, yeah, he'll... Oh, well. So we'll talk to him after the Gloucester game, I guess.
Okay, so now I'm clear on the various playoff formats. It's up to the tournament, and the tournament directors, if it's not televised, and it's the tournament directors and the TV, if it is a televised tournament, what are they going to play? Sudden death? Are they going to play three? Because sometimes they go back to 16 and play in, or they go back to 10 and play the backside. Or they play, like he said, sometimes they come back the next day and they have a playoff, you know, a full 18. So there's no standard gauge of overtime.
It seemed, when I was listening to Gary explain that, it sounded very similar to home field ground rules.
Yeah, basically.
Right?
Yeah, and the advertise, and the networks are the home team every time.
Oh, yeah. Well, you went over to the Senior Open, and when it was like visiting a different country with all the television stuff there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It was mind-boggling.
Yeah, you see all the trailers and everything. And the
But the buildings that they erected, the
yeah.
buildings, and
yeah,
they weren't there the day before.
Yeah, the stands, the viewing stands for the announcers and the
television
towers for the cameras.
Good heavens.
Where they're situated, and it's like, okay.
Amazing.
So this is what happens. So this is what is behind the scenes that you really don't realize how much there is on a weekend when you're watching them play somewhere else in the country.
I honestly was more interested in that than I was the golf. Although the golf was fantastic, I love seeing the seniors. You know, and some of those guys, man, they're on a senior tour. Good God, I mean, they're sculpted. they may be in their 50s or 60s, but damn, they're good athletes.
Well, for most of them, they're walking. They're not riding carts.
I didn't see anybody riding a cart.
No, you can't.
Oh, okay.
You can't.
That's right. There's one guy who can.
Well, yeah, and he has an exemption because
right.
he has a medical condition.
Okay. All right. Let's take a very short break, and we'll come back with Nick Kukuru, and then we'll probably have to run Coach Zerilli into our overtime. Those are our ground rules for tonight.
Well, I saw Coach Zerilli today at school.
This is North Shore Sports Night. That's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. We'll be right back.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
All right, Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Kukuru is on the line now. Nick, how are you doing?
Hey, excellent. How's it going?
All right. Well, we're here, and Kearns is here, and you know what? I don't have a question to ask you except tell me something you want to tell me about sports.
All right, Nick, wrap up the baseball playoffs.
We did that last
week. What's that?
Oh, you did that. Oh, never mind.
We did that last week.
I wasn't here last
no,
week.
No, Tim wasn't here last week.
My wife was on vacation. Okay.
So,
well, the run of the Mariners was over.
Yeah, over. Five in a row, and they come one game short. Rockport knocked them off last Sunday. And you know what? I thought Rockport actually really deserved it. I thought they were the better team. They were the best team at the end of the season, about the midway point of the season. They were actually in a rough first half, and they took off, and they beat all the good teams. And, I mean, they proved it in a five-game series. So, they definitely earned that championship.
Who's the coach of Rockport, Nick?
Jay Palazzola.
Yeah, I just ran into you know what? I ran into Jay yesterday, and he had the Rockport Tawny shirt on, and I met him at Reunion Hall, otherwise known as Market Basket, and
yeah,
and we talked for half an hour. And I couldn't even remember who I talked to yesterday, but Jay was quite happy.
Yeah, I mean, he should be. He's there. You know, that team had a bit of a rebuilding stretch about 4 or 5 years ago. Where, you know, they were a powerhouse team for a long time, and a lot of those guys that were kind of in their 30s and had been in the league for about 10 years kind of stepped aside, and he took over, and he only had three players coming back, so he had to completely overhaul the team. They had a few rough seasons where they took some lumps, but now they're back. They're back at the top.
You know, it's funny. You know how seriously we take our baseball around here when we talk about the Intertown League. Teams having to rebuild.
You know? I know.
And we talk about it in a very serious tone.
Listen, Nick, talking with Coach Zerilli and at Gloucester football, he's coming up on an interview that we've got here in a couple of minutes. But the lack of numbers, and same thing over in Manchester by the Sea. And have you heard any talk about a possible co-op program in football?
I have not. That's actually the first I've ever heard it mentioned. No.
Well,
it's a good point. The numbers are pretty low. I couldn't believe it. I went down to practice last week, and there was barely any cars in the parking lot. I thought I'd missed them, and they weren't there, but they were just inside.
Right.
They just
I think
seven kids that can drive, I guess.
Just I know that's what's amazing. I did the same thing today when I went to practice, and I'm saying, and I saw the kids out on the field, and I said, wait a minute, this is it? But imagine, I was just, I don't know, guess fantasizing about, how about a Manchester by the Sea, Gloucester co-op football team? Hey, that would be, that'd be pretty interesting.
That'd be interesting, and they'd have depth. They'd certainly have depth, that's for sure.
Well, they would have depth,
yeah,
and
that would be. I mean, I honestly never thought of that before, but it is an interesting idea, because, you know, I mean, Manchester Essex has, what, 30 kids in the entire program. You know, Coach Hutton was telling me last week, he likes to get as many scrimmages as possible, just so his starters don't have to beat up on the freshmen every day, because they really don't have much of a choice.
Right. I'd like to see Coach Hutton help and Coach Zerilli really work together at some point down the road. Maybe down the road, but Gloucester apparently is not going to be having a JV program.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough pill to swallow, to be honest with you.
It's amazing.
I know it's been, it is, it's, and it's still good. It's not that you can say, you know, excuse me, a lack of success has led to this, because they've had success. They've won 3 conference championships in the last 4 years. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the problem is.
Mm.
You know, does it make more sense just to have a freshman team or to have a JV team instead, like, you know, Coach Lafarte did in that last spring when he didn't have a freshman team and he combined the two into a freshman JV team?
Yeah, I don't think it matters to be completely honest with that.
But if you go freshman, you can't play sophomores and juniors on it.
Football team for a long time. It's not much different, the players that you get. A lot of those teams that the freshman teams play are mostly sophomores. It's not like they're playing against all freshmen every week anyways.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a huge difference. I guess there's obviously a difference because there's some juniors on JV teams, but it's not really a that big of a difference. I don't know if it would, I guess I'd say JV team just because, you know, they'd automatically be playing against some older kids.
All right, the kids go back to school tomorrow. What catches your eye on Cape Ann, Nick?
Well, I think actually we have tomorrow just a kind of overview of, you know, the change in conference landscapes again. I mean, we went through it in the spring, and it's a little bit different in the fall. Some sports go by, you know, recent success. Other sports go by enrollment. So, that's kind of the most interesting thing. How are the Greater Boston League teams going to fit in? I know Somerville has a powerhouse boys soccer team. And other than that, I don't really know much about them, but I did think they were a pretty solid addition to the conference in baseball during the fall season. So I was actually pleasantly surprised that they were all pretty comparable to the rest of the conference.
You know, the only thing in today's economy where they're talking about, you know, fiscal austerity and you've got to keep costs down, to enlarge the conference, to take on teams that are so much further away, you know,
and you got
the varsity, and you're going to have a JV team or a freshman team you got to send out there. It just seems to go against all common sense to expand the league into that kind of geographic territory.
Yeah, and especially when the conference has rejected Masconomets and wanted to get into the NEC for years, and they can't, you know, they keep getting rejected, but now they're going to take these 4 schools that they never play in anything and aren't really even that close to the meat of the conference. It was a head scratcher to me too.
I want Hamilton Wenham, Ipswich, Masconomet, Newburyport to play with the old base Northeast Conference teams. That's what I want for a league.
That'd be great. That'd be ideal. I mean, you get everybody in the right geographical area. That'd be ideal. It probably makes too much sense, though. So
well, that's why they don't want us, you know, giving them ideas, because they make sense and then they look stupid. So they'd rather wallow in their, you know, ineptitude.
Okay, if I'm making sense, then you guys got a problem. Okay, so that I worry
we
about
discuss
that
in the hallway.
I'm sure, and not only behind my back, but also to my face.
Face to face. You know, that doesn't matter.
All right, Nick, what else? Anything else catching? What you got coming up in the paper this week?
Yeah, so I said tomorrow, just kind of breaking down the conference. We're going to do a little wrap-up with some of the summer stuff that's, you know, on the way out. And then I'm hoping to get a couple previews nailed down for the end of the week for Friday and Saturday's paper. So, and then next week will be all previews, and then we start with some games.
I know. Here we go. All right, Nick, we're off next week. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, I guess.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Nick. Keep up the good work.
Nick, enjoy the holiday weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks. You too.
Take care,
thanks.
Nick. Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Kukuru. That's it, Coach. We're going to go to Coach Cirilli's our interview, and then we'll bail out of this. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I shall be here. Okay. Jeez, I may make it home in time to see Midsummer Murders.
Yes, you might. Yes, you might. All right, so we're going to close out with Coach Cirilli. And that's going to be it for tonight. Don't forget, we have connections on Thursday at 10 a.m. Might have a special guest. I'm really, really pulling for it. We'll see. And then on Friday, it is trending now with Josh Arnold. And again, we will be off next Monday. But then the following weekend, a week from Friday, we got football. We got a lot of games coming up. So check out the football schedule on MSO News Sports right at the top of the page there. And you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. On behalf of Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye. Back with Fisherman Forecast Now, Gloucester football coach Tony Zerilli. And
days are winding down here, Coach. School starts for the kids, I guess, tomorrow. And you've been at it for a week, so learn anything yet?
Yeah, I think we have, you know, we have a younger team this year. But I think we're really hungry. We got a lot of juniors that are fighting for spots right now. And I think we're excited. I think we're hungry. We had a pretty decent scrimmage on Saturday, and we're just looking to build on that.
What's the scrimmage tell you this early? How do you plan that, or how do you assign kids, or, you know, what's the plan?
It tells us really what we need to work on is what it tells you. Mm-hmm. You kind of focus on those types of things rather than, hey, that was a great play. It's more like, all right, okay play, but what could we do better about it, and what could we work, what do we need to work on? And most of the time it's steps, it's technique, it's just fine-tuning some things here and there. I felt like the most part, offensively, we knew where we were supposed to be. We just need to get there with force now and be more confident in what we're doing. And I think that comes with some of this experience in scrimmages and varsity experience. Mm-hmm.
There used to be a time when you had the old 8 millimeter film or whatever it was, 16 millimeter, and you know, you could work with the stuff. How do you take notes on a scrimmage, Tony, when everything is going on? You got, I was going to say, so many kids, but there are a lot of kids, and as you just mentioned, you're looking for hints of things that need improvement. So how do you evaluate that?
Everything's digital now, right? We actually for scrimmages, we have a camera that kind of stays right behind the offense huddle and views everything from the kind of end zone view or eagle eye view from probably about 10 yards behind the offensive line. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a lot easier to evaluate those things in a scrimmage than it is in a game where you have a lot of sideline footage. You can see where the defense is aligned. You can see where we're aligning as a defense, where we're wrong, where our alignment needs to be adjusted, where they have us overmatched based on our alignment, our technique. It's really good at evaluating offensive line footwork, where their first step is, the directionality of that step, whether it needs to be down a little bit more or upfield or where it's going. Same with the backfield. You really see the backfield. So actually, scrimmages are great for that. You can get right behind the offensive line and really video it from there. And I'll tell you, we just watched the film now, and we've watched it twice today. And every time you watch it, you pick up on a little thing here, a little thing there that we could be doing better. Especially with footwork and force and getting low and getting low in our blocks.
Do you ever have a kid say, no, I didn't do that, coach. It wasn't me.
All the time. And the story is that film doesn't lie, right? So you get back to the huddle. Well, why didn't you block? Well, that guy wasn't really their coach. Okay, he wasn't there. Well, we'll watch film tomorrow and see. And it's funny, you know, you get on the bus ride home and you go home. Well, it wasn't that bad of a scrimmage. You know, I thought we did a lot of things well. And then you watch the film and you're like,
Okay,
well, we have a lot of stuff to work on, and that's usually the way it goes because, you know, nothing's perfect. Nothing's exact in football. You have people moving all over the place, and sometimes the defense is moving where you expect them to move, and sometimes they're moving where you don't expect them to move, and, you know, sometimes they don't know where they're moving. So when you're running an offense, it's kind of helter-skelter, and plays sometimes work where they shouldn't and sometimes don't work where they should. So the film really allows you to break that down and find out where, when, and why.
Sometimes you have experienced kids who can help be coaches, I guess, who know what they're doing. And sometimes it's seniors, sometimes it's your captains and so on. But other times you have more inexperienced players. So that puts, I would guess, more emphasis on your coaches. And speaking of coaches, this year it would seem to be especially challenging. You have to coach the coaches at first.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, these guys have been great. I mean, they're new to us, but they've been around football their whole lives. Mm-hmm. You know, Joey Avila and John Fosbury have been with me. They've been with me the last several years. They know what they're doing. They know their positional group. They know how to coach that. Tim Philpott and Paul Hickey came on this year. Yeah, they're first year coaches for us, but, you know, Tim played, you know, he played high school, he played college, his kids played for us, he's coached before, Paul Hickey's coached for 20 plus years, he's refereed. I mean, these guys know football. So when they get in here, it's not like you have to teach them football. They understand football. What you really need to teach them is our X's and O's. And these guys have been working hard all summer long, and they really get it. And because they're football guys, because they're students of the game, they understand the concepts and what we're trying to do. And I'll tell you, they've picked up great. And, I, you know, the five five of us are kind of just working like we've always worked to get. Like I've been working with them for, you know, three or four seasons.
Excellent.
So I'm happy with them. They've been doing a great job.
Oh, that sounds good. What about a challenge? What's the biggest challenge you face going into a season, Tony, whether it's, you know, with experienced kids or inexperienced kids? Is there something that's similar each year when you prep, you know, before you actually start the season? Or is it a new challenge every year?
I mean, there's new challenges. There's always the consistent challenge. You know, it seems like offensive and defensive line is a challenge every year because you generally start your bigger, stronger, older, more mature kids on those positions, and those kids graduate every year. Mm-hmm. So every year, you know, trying to find an offensive defensive line, especially in the wing T, is always key. And that's why we scheduled the scrimmage this year a little bit earlier. You know, normally we don't have our first scrimmage till Wednesday coming up. Mm-hmm. And that will now be our second scrimmage because we scrimmaged early this year. We scrimmaged this first week of the playoff or the preseason. And I think that's going to help us. I think it helps us see what we need to work on, where we need positions to be filled, where we need to add to the competitive balance. So I think having that early scrimmage really helps us a lot.
Do you find a need? I asked you this question last year, so I'll ask it again. Is there a need sometimes to move this year to move kids from a position they were expecting to play to somewhere else's, you know, or is it sort of like a versatile thing where a kid can play? I'm guessing it's not like what the Patriots do. They got guys who can play many positions. Is it like that in high school?
Yeah, I mean, probably more so in high school. You have to. You know, we have a kid who's playing guard right now that was playing fullback at the beginning of the season, you know. And then, you know, he's playing Mike. He's playing a little D-line. We have another kid who started at split end who's now playing fullback, you know, and a little tight end. So we have a split end playing tight end, a tight end playing, you know, we move these kids all around. We ask the backs to know all of the backfield positions, running back, wing back, fullback. We ask the line to know multiple positions. Depth is a big thing for us. We need depth, and you either create depth with a lot of kids, or you create depth by being versatile at a lot of different positions. So having one kid know multiple positions. And that's the way it's been kind of for the last several years here. You know, we don't have a lot of depth, so it's just getting guys to play multiple positions. We might have a swing guard who knows both guards. We might have a tackle that plays both tackles. Our center might know both guard spots. Our tight end might know split end, or our split end might know wing back, and our wing back is going to know fullback and running back. In general, our quarterback is our quarterback. Everybody else around him can be a revolving door, essentially.
How important is that, or how much of an advantage do you have, Coach, and I just realized this, if someone does know multiple positions, even if he's in one place, one position, and he's anchored there for the season, yep, but he knows other things, how helpful is that in the huddle or out on the field?
Oh, it's absolutely essential that they know other positions and the responsibilities of those other positions, both offensively and defensively. And I've been talking a lot about offense, but defensively, you know, our D-line needs to know exactly what the other D-linemen are doing on every play. Linebackers need to know what the D-line's doing so they know what gaps they're responsible for, what the stunt is, and where they're moving, and how that changes their responsibility. Secondary needs to know if the linebackers are... I mean, everything's key, right? It takes 11 men to win football games, and all 11 men need to know what the other 10 responsibilities are on that field so that they can make sure they do theirs and everybody else is doing theirs. Same with offense. Like our offensive line, our blocking schemes don't work if the guard doesn't know what the center and tackle next to him are doing. So, you know, we study and we practice and we try to get these kids to be students of the game, that they understand what everybody on that field is doing. The fullback's got to know what the guard does. Fullback's got to know what the tackle does. Running back's got to know what the wing back's doing. So that's important to us, very important to us.
Sounds to me like it's easier to teach math.
Probably is.
I think so. Okay, Coach, tell me a little bit about some of your experienced guys, and I'll let you go because I know you're out here busy, but I know you've got a couple guys coming back.
Yeah, we got Ollie Emerson, starting tight end for us, start outside linebacker for us, going to go back to those same two positions. Had a lot of experience, started both ways as a junior last year, one of our captains. We got Matt Smith, who started for us at safety last year. He'll be back at safety, also probably be our starting quarterback, depending how the scrimmage goes. And Mark Smith, who's playing wingback for us, played a little secondary for us last year, and he'll be back at both of those spots as well. Mm-hmm. We have Carlos Hernandez, who started at guard for us last year. He's going to play guard and defensive end. Kevin Gabriel, who played a little line for us last year, who's going to play line and defensive end for us. So we got about five or six guys that have some varsity experience. Ryan Argentino played a little fullback last year for us. He'll be back at fullback, playing a little Mike linebacker. John Ortiz, who played safety for us last year, playing a little outside linebacker this year, moving up in the box, got a lot stronger in the offseason, and he'll be taking over for Christian, playing running back for us.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about the schedule as we go along, but anything else you want to mention is, I know what I was going to ask you. What's up for the week?
So we got doubles today. School starts tomorrow, so they'll be back at school tomorrow. So we'll have a single session, kind of get into our weekly routine. Wednesday we scrimmage Triton. Thursday they have school again, so we'll just have a single session. And then Friday's our last double session. That's the end of camp. And then we start Revere Week.
Revere Week. Okay, and Coach Ciccatelli.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it'll be Thanksgiving before you know it, but let's enjoy the sunshine.
It goes fast.
It does. All right, Coach. Thank you. Tony Zerilli with Fisherman's Forecast. I'm Rick Moore.